They say that this world is unreal, with no foundation, no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. They here refers to persons of demoniac nature. Purport. The demoniac conclude that the world is phantasmagoria. There is no cause and effect, no controller, no purpose. Everything is unreal. They say that this cosmic manifestation arises due to chance, material actions, and reactions. They do not think that the world was created by God for a certain purpose. They have their own theory, that the world has come about in its own way, and that there is no reason to believe that there is a God behind it. For them, there is no difference between spirit and matter, and they do not accept the Supreme Spirit. Everything is matter only, and the whole cosmos is supposed to be a mass of ignorance. According to them, everything is void, and whatever manifestation exists is due to our ignorance in perception. They take it for granted that all manifestation of diversity is a display of ignorance. Just as in a dream, we may create so many things which actually have no existence. So when we are awake, we shall see that everything is simply a dream. But factually, although the demons say that life is a dream, they are very expert in enjoying this dream. And so, instead of acquiring knowledge, they become more and more implicated in their dreamland. They conclude that as a child is simply the result of sexual intercourse between man and woman, this world is born without any soul. For them, it is only a combination of matter that has produced the living entities, and there is no question of the existence of the soul. As many living creatures come out from perspiration and from a dead body without any cause, the whole living world has come out of the material combinations of the cosmic manifestation. Therefore, material nature is the cause of this manifestation, and there is no other cause. They do not believe in the words of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Maya dhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Under my direction, the whole material world is moving. In other words, among the demons, there is no perfect knowledge of the creation of the world. Every one of them has some particular theory of his own. According to them, one interpretation of the scriptures is as good as another, for they do not believe in a standard understanding of the scriptural injunctions.
Om jnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurin militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha Nama Shrestham Manamapi Shachiputram Atra Surupam Rupam Tasyagrajam Urupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tam Natosmi Vandeham Shri Guru Shriyatav Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagraja Tam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakha Vitamstha Vedaham Etam Purusham Mahantam Adityavarnam Tamasa Parastat Tameva viditvati mrityumeti nanyafpanta vidyate yanaya jayati jananivaso deviki janmavado yaduvara parishat svardor bhir asyanda dharmam sthirachara vrijanagana susmita shrimukhena vrajapura vanitanam vardhayan kama devam Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Asatyam apratishtam te jagad ahur anishvaram aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kama hetukam. They say that this world is unreal with no God in control. It has come about simply by some chance with no other cause than lust. This is Krishna speaking to Arjuna 5,000 years ago. He spoke this many millions of years ago to the sun god. He's describing the basic mindset of demoniac people. Asuram bhavam ashrita. Asuram bhavam ashrita. Those who have taken shelter of, or those who have fully taken on the nature of demoniac persons, persons who are not just non-believers in God, but actually oppose the very idea of God. As the late Christopher Hitchens would say, I am not an atheist, I am an anti-theist. The author of the best-selling book, God is Not Great. So this atheism, it's nothing new. And in future there will be atheists also. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada speaks about different general atheistic theories. It's not that every atheist agrees or promotes any particular... it's not that they all agree that atheism is the same. There are different brands of atheism. For instance, Buddhists are also considered atheists. Vedna mani abod hoito nastik. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that because the Buddhists don't accept the Vedas, they're called nastik, which is translated, it literally means there is not. They don't accept that there isness. Is there, for them there is isn'tness. So that word is translated as atheist. And actually, Buddhists, they don't accept the existence of anything transcendental. What to speak of transcendental person, personality of Godhead. But then we find that anti-theists, or they're not just anti-theism, but they're anti anything which doesn't fit in their idea of what should be considered real. And so they're against Buddhism also, against any belief in anything which they don't consider scientific. The present dominant mode of atheism, of clearly defined atheism, I mean, in the Western world, apart from the mass apathy toward anything religious, but in terms of actual hardcore, clearly defined atheism, the present prominent manifestation of that is what has come to be called scientism. So I'd like to speak about scientism. This is a new word. What does this mean, scientism? It's similar to another new word, which is quite prominent. If you'll come across this word, Islamism, if you happen to browse the news. Islamism is distinct from Islam in as much as what is called Islamism means to fanatically and often dangerously promote Islam. So scientism is a term which is not as well known as Islamism, but it's distinguished from, the term Islamism is distinguished from the term Islam with the idea that Islam, well, okay, that's all right. It's okay to be a Muslim. We have nothing against that. But this kind of fanatical and often dangerous, life-threatening promotion of Islam, that is called Islamism. So scientism is a term which is used by people who are similarly disenchanted with the promotion of science in the name of science. A whole outlook which is more than what should be the boundaries of science. What is called science in the modern world means to examine the world and find out how it's working at the mechanical level. But scientism is a term that is applied to the doctrine that science can explain anything and the fanatical promotion of it, that if you don't believe this, then you're just like in Islamism. If you don't accept this, then you are persona non grata. You are stupid, foolish, and Islamism. You may be fit to be killed, although scientism doesn't promote that. But it is considered just, Christopher Hitchens' anti-theism. It's something which should be blotted out of people who don't accept the idea that science can explain everything and has already explained the most important questions. Such persons, even though there are many of them, are enemies of the progress of the human race. In a recent interview, Richard Dawkins, who's the most famous propagator of atheism in the world, although he says, I'm not fully an atheist, but I'm actually an agnostic because there's no proof there isn't God, but he says that I believe in God as much as I believe in fairies. Well, maybe there are fairies also. He uses that as an example to say that it's just a stupid belief. But I came to the conclusion long ago that, well, seeing as all over the world, people over generations spoke about fairies and gnomes and elves, and in Ireland, leprechauns and dragons, and so they probably were there and are there. But because we don't find them in microscopes or telescopes or any other kind of scope, we don't believe that they exist anymore. We think fairy stories. It's just a fairy story that there are fairies. So this doctrine, it's promoted evangelically. Asatyam apratishtam te. They say there is no ultimate truth. There's no foundation to everything. Aparaspara sambhutam. Everything has come into being. This can be translated or understood to mean sambhutam means coming into being. Aparaspara means without any particular plan or any particular interaction by chance. So there you go. The idea that the universe has come into being by chance was not a modern scientific theory. It's Krishna stating it here in Bhagavad Gita, that such people, they think like that. It's nothing new to have such a theory. So scientism means the promote. It's been noted that persons like Richard Dawkins, they're on a mission, evangelical. It's to promote scientific fundamentalism. I've watched a few interviews of various people trying to debate with him, but no one ever put the question to him or to any of his accomplices, like Chris Hitchens is dead and Sam Harris is still going on, that, if everything's just chemicals, then why are you so bothered to promote anything? If everything's just chemicals, then what does it matter whether people, what they believe or what they don't believe? Anyway, it's just a mass of chemicals floating in space. So what? And why are you so worried to investigate it and find out? You say, well, improve the human condition. What's the point? What's the point of improving? It's just some chemicals that come together for a short time and separate again. And why? What's the point of improving? What's the meaning of improving the human condition? So, no one even thought about that, to even ask him that. So, we should be concerned with such things, with such matters. Srila Prabhupada was certainly concerned with such matters. Srila Prabhupada noted that this cheating of the scientists are cheating others. We can admit that they have made certain technological, what's the word, developments, innovations, which have purported to have improved our lives. But that doesn't give them the right to deny that there's any supreme controller, or to talk about the meaning or the purpose of life or any such thing. In Dawkins' book, he addresses this object, this famous, most famous book of his, The God Delusion. He addresses the question that, then what it is that without belief in God, there's no meaning to life? And his reply to that was, yeah, well, the meaning is that, well, we can enjoy ourselves. We can be happy. And he said, and actually, after I spoke with this person, I went with my friends and we went to the pub and we had a nice dinner and some beer, and that shows the purpose of life. Very weak, very weak. In fact, I read that whole book, and very, very weak. So in the name of science, I mean, there are so many problems, philosophical problems with their theories, but it's a symptom of Kali Yuga mentioned in the 12th canto of Bhagavatam, that darshtatvam dharma evahi, that something will be established as fact simply if someone insists on it enough. If you say, yes, I am God, I am God, and then he starts to believe it himself, and other people start to believe it, just by assertion, just like topical point, Russians are evil. They need to be attacked. The Western world has to bring its forces together to attack Russia. It's all propaganda. Just by propaganda, they want to get in the mind. They want to spend billions of dollars so they can kill a bunch of people. The taxpayers don't think, well, they could use that, for instance, for giving us our pensions and for giving better hospital services and better education for the citizens. I think, no, we're going to stop those Russians. So just by propaganda, they mislead people. That's maybe a controversial point, but you can see it's quite clear that how the mass media manipulates people. Or a less controversial example, Coca-Cola or Pepsi-Cola. Just by advertisement, people buy it. Otherwise, no one would ever buy it. So it's just promoted. Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola. People think, oh, Coca, and then they go and buy the Coca-Cola. Just by propaganda. So by propaganda, they talk about Big Bang and so many things. And then people believe it. And because Dawkins is convinced, yes, this question was put to him recently, that, well, do you believe that if all religion vanished from the world tomorrow, it would be better? The world would be a better place. It's obvious what he's going to answer. Yes. But because he says so, is that a fact? Actually, maybe it's true to a large extent. Because what goes... He and his ilk make a major philosophical mistake, which, again, no one seems to have noticed, that they conflate the concept of the existence of transcendence and the supreme transcendence, the supreme controller. They conflate that with the manifestation of religion as it's seen in the world today, which is not necessarily... Even if religion is bad, which certainly many bad things come from it, what goes on in the name of religion? But it's not the same argument as to the existence of God. Just like my father may be a very bad man, but that doesn't, whether he exists or not, doesn't depend on his character. So, how could my father be such a bad man? Well, your father can't be a bad man. He doesn't exist at all. It's mixing up, and again, no one notices it. I've never seen anyone debate with him who's actually a very good debate, because what they're trying to defend, their religion, is not very defendable, actually, and they don't have any real good philosophy. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada wanted us to take up this work. Increasingly, many people believe, that's been there for years and years, that people believe that a scientific outlook means an atheistic outlook. And the very enterprise of science, as it's understood in the modern world, the very underlying attitude is atheistic. Because what is science? It is searching for causes. Why? Why does the apple fall on the ground from the tree? Why, when I eat many apples, to give another example from apples, do I get a stomachache? So it's searching for causes in natural terms rather than supernatural terms. Of course, the apple falling from the tree, Isaac Newton was a theist. We believe that there are certain natural causes, but behind it all there is the supernatural cause of God. But as science has progressed, hear that term progress. The word is used progress. In other words, built into the whole concept of science and built into the whole concept of modern civilization is the word progress, that things are getting better. And it's used so universally that we just take it for granted. with the progression of civilization, with the progression of, this is the way the English language treats science and civilization. The inbuilt concept that things are getting better. So with the progress, we can also use the word progress in terms of its development in course of time. With the progress of science, it has become increasingly atheistic. And Dawkins' claim is that there's no need to believe in God because science explains everything. You don't need a God to explain anything because science explains everything. We know that this universe came into being from a Big Bang, and we don't know how the Big Bang happened. We have absolutely no clue whatsoever or what was before the Big Bang or how or why it banged. But apart from these minor questions, we can explain everything. So it's missing a lot, isn't it? But there can't be any supernatural cause. Well, why not? Because we said so, and we're scientists, so we know. I often thought about this Big Bang theory that they say because, according to their theories, the universe is expanding. So that means that originally it all started from one point. But there's a big problem with that, that just by seeing an effect, you can't always understand its cause. For instance, if you saw a butterfly and you didn't happen to know, you never went to biology class, how would you ever come to the conclusion that that butterfly a short time ago was a caterpillar? It's not simply by backward extrapolation. How would you understand that the caterpillar turned into a butterfly or the tadpole turned into a frog? The tadpole doesn't look anything like a frog. So if you look at the frog, how would you understand it came from a tadpole? Or even that, even if you saw a grown human, how would you, just by backward extrapolation, understand that it came from an embryo in the womb? So there's a lot of guesswork there. Anyway, the whole endeavor of science is to explain everything in materialistic terms. Scientism is wholly materialistic, using the term materialistic in the philosophical sense. Usually when we say materialistic, we talk about someone who's interested in getting lots of money and enjoying life, but materialism in philosophical terms means the position that there is nothing but matter. There's nothing beyond matter. There is only matter. There's no superior nature or spiritual nature. There's only nature. There's nothing more than that. Srila Prabhupada would say, whose nature? If we talk about nature, it should be someone's nature. Nature, in Sanskrit, the word is used prakriti, or for energy, shakti. So, prakriti, that is always linked with purusha. Nature is the nature of someone. Prakriti is female, purusha is male. Shakti, energy, means there's a source of that energy, shaktiman. Where has everything come from? If we ask where has everything come from, they'll say nothing, it's just there was a nothing and there was a big bang. It's a belief. They present it as scientific, but it's a belief. They believe that we have absorbed the universe and we've all come to, it's called the Big Bang Theory. In science, theory means, they try to distinguish scientific theory from just some guesswork by saying that a scientific theory means that it's accepted by, it's a generally accepted proposition, accepted by many experts in the field by studying the available data. So it's not just a guess. It's it can be used for further scientific investigation, just like it's still called Darwinian theory of evolution. So that is used as a broad template for explaining all kinds of different things. For instance, various fossils that are found here and there, and why we have molar teeth and all kinds of different things. It's all explained according to evolutionary theory, and it all seems to fit to some people. So they have, but basically it's a belief which they promote as if it's a fact. The scientismists, they promote that this is science. Science should be that they can prove. They can show. They say you can't prove. There's no proof that there's God. Well, there's no proof. There's no proof of anything, actually. If you really want to get down to it, there's no proof that Richard Dawkins exists. There's no proof of anything. If we want to be doubtful, there's definitely no proof that there's a Big Bang. It's an accepted theory which explains many things, they say. Well, it explains that it appears to them the universe is increasing. But then there are many problems. And in fact, with many of their theories, there are many problems. And then they have to invent something to prop up the theory. Like they have to invent lots of invisible matter to explain how the gravitation of the gravitational force within the universe is far more than it should be, considering the mass of the universe. So, because gravitation is supposed to be caused by mass, but it's not there. So it must be invisible. It's there, but we can't see it. That's accepted. That's absolutely accepted scientific theory. They won't put it so bluntly like that, so it sounds stupid, because it is stupid. And now they have they have dark mass. Now they have dark energy also. There's a lot of energy out there, it's a lot of energy, but we can't perceive it in any way whatsoever, except that we presume it's there. It's a belief. Also, they create the science, the promoters of scientism. They say that, well, this world is so full of suffering. Why would God create that? If God is good, that's why Christopher Hitchens comes up with the theory is God is not good, because they presume that God is there and He's supposed to be all kind. Well, why would He create a world full of suffering? And different theologians have different theories about that. When Pope Benedict was asked about this, he said it's inconceivable. We can't understand it. In Islam, some they say that what is it? Oh, I had it in my head. I forgot it. They say that God created the world like this. I can't remember. I did. Sorry. Maybe some other time I'll remember. They have some kind of reason. But they don't actually understand that we make our own suffering. God is good. We are not good. It's not that we are good and God is not good. We are good. We'd like to live very peacefully and happily, but that jerk up there made it bad for us. It's his fault. And then some people, well, there is no big jerk in the sky. We're just a bunch of chemicals and we're here, so there's no need to believe in any God. Another point, atheistic scientists bring up that, why if there's a God, why did he create a massive, incredibly complex universe wherein life on this planet is a temporary chance manifestation? Because from what they can see in the whole universe, there might be life on other planets. They're increasingly open to that possibility, but it's very rare. And life on this planet, according to them, is also, it's come about as a temporary manifestation, and it won't last very long, because when this planet first came into existence, the conditions on it were not conducive for life, but gradually life came into being. But after some time, the conditions on this planet will change, the temperature will change, the atmospheric pressure will change, and so many things will change, and then life won't be supported. So life as we know it, it's just a temporary thing on this planet. So it's obvious there isn't any God. It's just something which came about. And this whole idea that Jesus came to save us, well, why did he create so many, why did God make so many planets and stars, and then just on one little planet there are a few people and Jesus came to save them? And the rest of the universe is just God was tinkering in his laboratory, and eventually with one of the planets, after many, many tries, he got it right. He created a world in which people could be born so that if they didn't believe in Jesus, they would go to hell. And the ones that did believe in Jesus, they would go to heaven. So God the Father is like some mad scientist in the sky. They point such things out, and it's very difficult for the Christians to defend. And they point out all kinds, not only the atheistic scientists, but atheistic theists. How about that one? Theists who were theists. But then they come to study the Bible, and they find out there are so many problems with it. This Richard Dawkins, he said that in his God Delusion book, I can't remember the whole sentence, it was quite a spectacular description of the God of the Old Testament being a nasty, vindictive, dangerous, he had a whole long sentence with many adjectives like this describing the God of the Old Testament. So there are many problems which people who come to study the Bible, they come to find out. Just like, for instance, the first five books of the Bible are all supposed to be written by Moses, but according to scholarly analysis, they must have been written by several different people. And even within the description in the four Gospels of Jesus, there are great differences in certain key episodes of the life of Jesus. They describe it quite differently. And then if we look at the history of the times, we find out that although there was quite a few historical narratives of what was going on in Palestine and the area of Galilee at that time, but there's no mention of Jesus, so some people doubt that Jesus even existed, or even if he did, he maybe wasn't such an important person. And there are so many problems. There are problems with the morality of the Old Testament, especially. There are problems with the Jesus story. There are all kinds of contradictions. The animals went in two by two. But then after that, shortly after that, it says they went in seven by seven. So all kinds of difficulties and problems in the Bible. So scholars are pointing this out. And previously it was just a thing which theologians would keep among themselves, and they wouldn't discuss it publicly. But now it's coming out more and more. And it's giving fuel to the atheist claim. So in scientism, it's It's often difficult to distinguish from science, because they say, for instance, a scientismist may say, or a scientist may say, that there's, well, actually, it'd be a scientismist would say that there's nothing more than chemicals in the whole. There's atoms and molecules. That's all there is in the universe. Or if you want to, or the physicist would say, well, there's nothing but energy. If we analyze, there's nothing but waves of energy in the universe. So that is actually a philosophical statement, because inherent in that statement is the presumption that there's nothing more in the universe than that which we can perceive. It's inherent in that statement is the supposition that the only thing that exists or can exist is that which we can perceive. It would be more honest to say that to our gross sensual perception, there is nothing more than atoms and molecules, and or the energies that make them up, and pass between them. So that would be a more honest statement, rather than to make such a statement that there's nothing more than chemicals, there's nothing more than energy waves. But that just presumes that matter is all that exists. That there is nothing beyond this. It sounds like a plausible, not just plausible, but settled statement. There's nothing but matter. If you study chemistry, you study everything, because there's nothing but chemicals. What else is there? Whatever you look, wherever you see, there's nothing but chemicals, and there's nothing else. So it sounds like it's plausible. I said, yeah, well, that's true. Yeah. Nothing but chemicals. But that just presumes that there is nothing but chemicals. They presume that everything can be explained in terms of science, in materialistic terms, in terms of matter. Now, Srila Prabhupada would often point out that there is the phenomenon of consciousness, which is independent of matter. And he would give the example that when a body dies, the same chemicals are there, but the consciousness has gone away, which means that the consciousness is a separate entity than the matter, which it previously energized. But scientists, I guess I should say scientismists, although there is, well, we can just in general say science, certain science, they say that consciousness is a function of the brain, and they want to give evidence of that by saying that when a person dies, the brain waves stop and there's no consciousness. So that means that consciousness is a function of the brain. And by applying electromagnetic forces to different areas of the brain, certain neuroscientists have stimulated in persons various experiences, like religious experiences. You want religious ecstasy? You can go and have some electromagnetic force put to some area of your brain. It only works in people who are predisposed to believe in religion. And even near-death experiences, they say, they can simulate it. So that proves, according to them, that consciousness and religious experience is a function of the brain. Some objections to that. One objection is that there are a few people who don't have any brain, literally. Their head is empty, literally. There's just some liquid, and the gray matter is almost nothing, but they function as normal people. whatever that means, but they're relative. It means, yeah, well, they get up in the morning, brush their teeth, and go to work. Another objection to that is, okay, what if a man is hungry and you stimulate him to feel that his belly is full? And you go on doing that until he dies of starvation. What does that prove? That the stimulation, you're stimulating in him something, but it doesn't, the stimulation in and of itself does not correspond to the reality of his situation. So simply by stimulating different things in the brain, you may be able to produce some thought, but that doesn't necessarily correspond to the reality of his situation. A yogi, if you give him, say, some stimulus, some chemical stimulant, he can just take it, some kind of drug that would put someone to sleep, or he can just take it, or some psychotropic drug. They can take it and there'll be no effect. So the brain is not all in all. Near-death experiences can be stimulated. What about out-of-body experiences? That's a different thing. Where people, it's quite common on the operating table, people look down from above their body, and then afterward they can remember all the things that the doctor was saying, even the jokes he cracked, and they would repeat the, they'd remember in great detail, and they can repeat the technical terms which the surgeon was using, which a layman would not know. So there is, it's not clear by any means that because the brain is a conduit for consciousness, as in fact the whole body is a conduit for consciousness, it doesn't mean that consciousness as a phenomenon is dependent upon the brain. It's the something like Sadaputta Prabhu used to give the hardware software analogy. So anyway, this is the kind of challenge that scientists will bring up. They will say that, you see, that consciousness is just a function of the brain, and people who are not trained in this, who to go any deeper, they will accept that. They will accept that the scientists are right. It sounds convincing. So, there's no doubt that science and science's corollary, technology, has had a tremendous influence on the world in which we live today. It's undeniable. The scope of knowledge makes what was previously considered knowledge seem to be childish, primitive. Previously, people used to believe that knowledge comes from the Bible, and what the priests and the church say, that is knowledge. But that was turned upside down by, for instance, Galileo looking through his telescope, and the idea of a geocentric universe, the Earth is in the center of the universe, got thrown out. And that was a major turning point, actually, in the cultural history of the Western world, or civilization as it's called. Generally, when in the Western world, when people talk of civilization, they mean the Western world. They're just overlooking the fact that there were developed civilizations, even when man in the West was going through the Dark Ages and so on. Science and its discoveries has vastly changed the world. It's very different from the world of today, is very different from the world of 1,000 years ago, 500 years ago, even 200 years ago, in terms of the way we live our lives and the way we perceive the world. I just made a actually very short list of a few of the things which, if we mention such terms, we're all familiar with them, and we all accept that they're acceptable, that they are part of the world and what makes up the world, but which people just a short time ago had no idea of. Some examples: atoms. Atoms, as they are now accepted to exist, were accepted to exist only in 1900. And then molecules. We all have some idea. So if we say atom, molecule, even if we're laymen, we all have some idea of what this means. But previously people had no idea of such a thing. Species, you may say. Previously there was no such idea of different species. Cells, talking about this, biological cells, people had no idea of any such thing. Genes, germs. Different kinds of energies, that there are different kinds of energies like X-rays, radio waves, light waves, sound waves, electricity. We can hardly imagine a world without electricity, but previously people had no idea that there was such a thing. Calculus. Going back more in time, mathematics based on what we call Arabic numerals. Previously, the Roman system of numeric system is, you can't do mathematics with it. We just take it for granted, but in the Western world it wasn't there, since it was brought from the Islamic world. Injections, medical injections, no idea of any such thing. Pharmaceuticals, space travel, then less exotic than space travel, bicycles, automobiles, factories, the periodic table, great breakthrough in understanding the way the world works, formulating a periodic table, gravity. Then some terms which are maybe not so well known. Valency, isotopes, entropy, redshifts. All these are very important concepts in understanding the world around us. Then microscopes, telescopes, laws of thermodynamics, anatomy. People didn't know what was inside the body because they didn't cut up bodies. They thought it was a horrible thing to do. And it is a horrible thing to do, to cut up dead bodies. But eventually, people started doing it and they found out what's inside the body. Otherwise, they didn't know. Screwdrivers, that's a useful thing. It's a very useful thing, isn't it? Screwdrivers. What to speak of chainsaws? If you have to chop all the wood for the winter by hand, it's a big job, keeps you healthy, takes a lot of time. Chainsaws makes it much quicker. Matches, you see, well, we say screwdrivers, matches, you think, well, it's just such a basic thing, you know. Why even mention it? But it's all come about due to science and technology. It's changed our life in to have fire easily available. We just take for granted matches. But it's that the invention of matches greatly changed the world. And electricity, we just can't imagine life without electricity. Then plastics, polymers, nylons, we all use every day. It's all come about through scientific advancement. The concept of tectonic plates, the various geological massive plates in the world has changed our understanding of this planet. That there was, or have been, several, and probably will again be in future, ice age. That's also, at least according to scientists. So, science continues to progress and alter the world within our lifetime. We have seen massive changes in the whole way the human society all over the world conducts its affairs due to the introduction of cell phones. Everyone has a cell phone. More or less, almost everyone. Even in countries like Bangladesh, most people have a cell phone. Computers widely available, and the internet. So science continues to make progress and change the world. It's got nothing to do with the question of whether God exists or not, but it is impressive if we think that this world is very important, which most people do, because they don't have any information of anything else. And if they take it that life is meant for enjoying the senses, which most people, they don't even question this. That's why this atheism debates, the both sides, the atheists and the theists, they both argue on the supposition that this world is meant for us to enjoy. And the atheists say that, well, there can't be a God because he would have made it better. He did. If we're an experiment in God's laboratory, it means he's just a tinkering scientist. He doesn't know what he's doing. He should have made it better. If he really was on top of, if he really knew everything, then he should have made it better. And the theists, they try to wriggle out of this, but they don't really have an answer. But for people who think that this world is meant to be enjoyable, it would seem that the scientists are doing a good job. Of course, the theists in defense, and it's not really a very good defense, would say that, well, science has also produced pollution, which is leading to extremely grave problems. Especially this global warming with weather changes, and it's science that has produced the weapons of mass destruction. It was not Saddam Hussein, it was the scientists who are to blame. And science has produced in so many ways so many problems. But all these discussions are irrelevant to the actual point. If we understand that anyway we're not the body, and life is not a product of matter, life is independent of matter. We are conscious living beings, we are meant to be happy, but this world is so constructed that unhappiness, distress is inbuilt, dukkhalayam, So the theism versus atheism debate is it's all on a wrong platform. But those who are on the wrong platform and defending theism, they have a hard time because it's a fact that science and technology have brought into being so many innovations that deeply affect our life. And either theists or the theists would have to admit that they wouldn't like to do without electricity or cell phones or so many different things. And if we think about it, in our lives, is there anything at any moment of the day that we do that is not intimately connected with some scientific innovation? Just like now, I'm speaking through a microphone. There's electric light. We're wearing clothes which are mass produced in factories and then shipped in. Actually, this is made by devotees. This is homemade. The chemical dye. Dyed with chemical dye. So at every moment of our lives, we lie down on a bed or a sleeping bag or a yoga mat, which is mass produced in a factory and then it's shipped. Just in a yoga mat, how much technology and science goes into producing to do the research, to find out where is the oil, to make the, and then the oil is extracted and how to make that particular kind of plastic and then market it and ship it and make such a plastic which is just perfect for that, which it is actually. So everything we do is intimately connected. But the scientists, they make the mistake of thinking that, well, we did it. God didn't do it. God didn't make yoga mats, plastic yoga mats. He didn't make electricity. We did it. It's all by man's effort. The scientists are very proud. We used to hear that man will conquer nature, will bring nature completely under our control, so there'll be no problems caused by nature. But, of course, they're finding out that's not possible. And we don't hear much of that now, that we're going to bring nature and control nature. But at least in my childhood, that was an idea that with the progress of human society, with science, we'll make the world a better place. And we'll also get humans to live forever. And they're still trying to pursue that. The holy grail of scientism. And also, with this progress of science is the idea that man is the measure of all things. This was actually said by a Greek philosopher. That it's not that God says, and therefore things are like that, but we look at the world. We see what's going on. We can understand. We can say. And we can adjust the world. And then from that comes the whole idea of humanism. We don't need any religion to tell us what to do. We can work out our own morality. There's no need to pray for anything. Just man is in control. So, Jagat Ahur and Ishwaram. There's no God in control. So, if we consider, we're just talking about all these scientific developments, but with that goes the whole idea of science. That in prior to the Enlightenment, beginning so-called Enlightenment, plunging into from the Dark Ages into another form of darkness, there was no idea of science as such. But the whole idea of science has come into being, that there is a scientific method in which you observe, you make a hypothesis, you test it, and you see if it works, and then if it works, you show it to other scientists, and if they all agree, then they all accept it. So this is the scientific method. There was no such idea of the idea. The whole idea of scientific knowledge has very powerfully influenced the whole world. It is actually a Western undertaking. It's modern science is a Western undertaking. It's not that there aren't Asian scientists. Maybe there are some African scientists, but I'm not sure. There must be a few here and there, but basically it's a Western undertaking. It's developed in the Western world. Most of the great name, by far the great, great majority of great scientists who have made great discoveries and innovations are from the West. And even those from other countries like India, just like Jagadish Chandra Bose, after whom bosons were named, but he came to science through having a Western education in India. So nowadays there are many scientists from Asia also, but they're all educated according to the system of science and scientific education which has been formulated and grown up in the West. So all in all, it is a very powerful force in our lives, and although scientific education with its inherent atheism has been going on for generations. Inherent atheism means the whole approach that man is the measure of all things. We can discover everything by our own looking at the world and fiddling around with it. The evolutionary theory, Big Bang theory, although this has been taught in schools for many generations, it's not been promoted until recently, as that this, it's not been promoted that this is the template of existence, that there is no God. But it's only recently that the atheists have become, in the name of science, have become very prominent in attacking theistic worldviews. And this all came about when, well, it's, it is, there's no single moment when this all came about, but when some scientists, looking at the complexity of microorganisms, thought that standard evolutionary theory does not explain this. It's too complex to come into being simply by random mutations, natural selection. They came to the conclusion that it would be a much better way to explain what we're seeing by a theory of intelligent design, which is just one step or half a step away from theism. And this is an attack on atheism, the implicit atheism, which is the underlayer of modern Western civilization, and increasingly all over the world as the world becomes more and more influenced by Western culture. So this attack on scientific theory, atheistic scientific theory, it gave rise to a massive counterattack. In which what was previously implicit is now being explicit. In other words, if we study atheistic theory, if we study science at school, then no one tells us that exactly, well, actually atheism is the real thing. But it's implicit that actually there's no need of God or any such thing. It's understood. But many people, they study that and then they go to church and they never really think about it very much. But now the atheists are becoming very strong, that We don't need God to, we don't need this idea of God. That's some primitive idea. Even if we don't understand everything, we can't explain everything by science, but gradually we're understanding. Previously, there are so many things we didn't understand. Gradually, we're coming to understand. So things we don't know now, we'll be able to explain in future. He speaks of the God of the gaps. That if you can't explain something, just say, well, God did it. The theists, they'll say, okay. We accept Big Bang Theory. Okay, give one point to the scientists. But God made the Big Bang. This God of the gaps. You don't know, so you just say God did it. But we'll do more scientific and research, and we'll find out that anyway, at the moment they say it's a singularity, which means they haven't got a clue about what or how it came into being, if at all it came into. They just presume it came into being. But their theory is that there was nothing and it exploded, and then everything came into being. Miraculously, in the way that it is. So they talk of the God of the gaps, but guess what? There'll always be gaps. They're never going to understand everything. We can never understand. Whenever we see in the history of science that when they think they've got everything all worked out, then they do some more research and say, whoops, the theory doesn't quite work. We have to adjust it. And science means they're just adjusting their theories on and always adjusting. So you can be sure that whatever you learned at school about science, that even if you got full marks, if you went back and did the same exam and you gave the same answers, you'd fail. Because what they call knowledge is always changing. So Srila Prabhupada pointed out, this is not knowledge. Perfect knowledge means if it's true, it's true. It doesn't change. Knowledge is not something that is subject to change, but that's inherent in the academic ethos, and it's not just in science, in every field. Agnosticism, they're quite proud of this. They said that whatever you know, well, it's always subject. If we find out more, it's subject to change. So now, for instance, we believe that Hitler was a very bad man, but maybe if we get some more evidence, we'll find out that actually, it was just because someone put some electromagnetic stimulus in his brain, but actually he was a nice man, but then someone messed him up. So you never know. It's not impossible. Everything is... scientists, they have this great... They feel very confident. You see, we made cell phones for you, and we made the internet for you, and we made matches for you, and we made electricity for you, and science, it's really great. But this scientific, atheistic outlook, it's all-pervading in modern life, and we may not even know how much we ourselves are influenced by it. Just like if we talk of germs and atoms and so. Of course, the word atom is there in Vedic terminology. I'll get back to that later. But this whole attitude that goes with it, that we are here on this planet and we can discover everything. There's no need and there's no point in trying to get to accept scriptural knowledge. The idea that there's some transcendent entity that gives us knowledge. I mean, look at what they got, the Bible and the Quran. It's okay, that the attempt at explaining the world of the authors of the Bible and the Quran, that it's understandable that people at that time who didn't have scientific knowledge would believe such things. But why should you believe it in the modern world? This is what they say. Then people believed in those times, for instance, that there could be a winged horse which could come down from heaven and bring Muhammad to heaven. But people who were credulous, naive, they could believe such things. But now in modern, we have modern science. Why should we, Why should we go on believing such things? This is what they claim. They have the bottom-up rather than top-down process. We're here, we study, we find out, we understand, whereas your idea, you just, God comes and tells you something, but then we find out there are so many problems with what you believe God told you. So why do you believe that at all? Then the religionists, they will say, well, scientists cannot answer the big question, why? What is the meaning of life? And scientists will say, well, it doesn't need answering. There's no need to answer it. Jagadah, what is it? Aparas, kimanyat kama haitu kama. There is no meaning. Why search for meaning? What is all this thing about meaning? It's anyway, everything is meaningless. So why bother looking for meaning? Although they themselves are doing that, why are they so anxious to study what's going on in the world? And by saying that there's no meaning, they're also giving some philosophy as to the meaning of life. By saying there's no meaning, they're also commenting on the meaning. The very concept of there being a meaning of life, we couldn't even conceptualize it unless there was such an entity. So, this debate is going on. This debate is going on and on and on. There's space exploration going into what they call deep space, although it's not, actually it's very close to the Earth in terms of, in terms of what they call the light years and the distance of different planets from our planet. But if we, it was actually, according to them, they've sent space probes way out into space, and then they photoed the Earth from deep space, and the photo comes back to Earth, which is a great scientific achievement in itself, to send space probes into space and send a photo. And if we look at the photo, we'll see in the huge, in the many, many stars and planets, just like on the new moon night, on a cloudless night, in a remote place where there are no influence of neon lights, you can see there are so many heavenly bodies, thousands and millions. So in among all of them is the Earth, just one dim little blob among millions of others, and that, as the astrophysicist Carl Sagan said, that this Earth, which we see, that little dim dot, this is the Earth on which great empires have arisen and fallen, and people have lived and hoped and lived and died, and many confident religions have come and gone. The little Earth, just a little pale dot. So this is the challenge of the scientists. The scientists, they challenge the biblical description of the origin of man. It's ridiculous. Adam and Eve. There was Adam, and then from his rib, God created Eve, and then they had two sons, and one killed the other, and then Cain and Abel, and then Cain, he had children. Who do you have children with? Who is his wife? There was only his mother, the only woman around. That's not explained. It's another biblical anomaly. God made everything in 6 days, and then he was tired. But there weren't any days before there were planets, because time is measured in the motion. Time is measured according to the motion of different relative objects, which is also given in the Bhagavatam. That time is measured according to relative motion of objects at the micro level and at the macro level, but there couldn't have been any days before God created anything. So the claim of the scientists is that if these people, they say that the Bible and the Quran, it's all coming from God, it's all divine, it's divine knowledge, we should accept it as it is. But if they have such bad theories, bad answers, based on primitive, uninformed legends and guesswork, if they have such bad understanding of the universe, then why should we take seriously their answer to the question about why anything exists? Why should we take seriously that there is God? If God gave them this Bible in which there are such primitive stories, then why should we accept? Actually, we don't have a problem with this, but the attack on the atheistic attack is mostly on Christianity and to some extent on Islam. But I'm just going through what they're saying. So it's a very strong attack that they make. And Dawkins, he's always astonished when he sees that despite all the evidence to the contrary, according to him, there are many people still believe in God. That's why he talks about the God delusion. He considers that people believe in God, it's due to something got messed up in the evolution process. And that many people, they have some gene, some unidentified gene, which they'll discover in future, which makes them believe in God. But it's actually, it might have been favorable at some point in man's evolutionary development to have such a belief, but now it's time to evolve. And if they can find the gene, maybe they'll zap it out of people so they won't believe in God anymore. And he's particularly astonished that how can scientists believe in God? How can you, with a degree in science, still believe in God? This some antiquated belief system. And if we see that among people who state themselves to be atheists, we'll find that the more educated people are, especially in science, the more percentage of atheists there is. So they state this to suggest that, you see, well, if you get science, the more you know about science, and then you understand the world as it actually is, because science explains the world as it is. It explains their atoms and molecules and reactions and x-rays and thermodynamics. So the more you know about the world as it actually is, explained according to science, then you're going to be an atheist. Of course, that's a false argument. Because there's a whole concept that goes with scientific education. It's just inbuilt that man is the measure of all things, that man by his own intelligence can understand everything and gradually is understanding everything. So that many scientists are atheists more than others doesn't actually establish that science establishes atheism, but rather it suggests that scientism promotes atheism. But scientists, they're considered that they're very intelligent people, which from certain perspective is true, very logical way of thinking. Well, science is supposed to train a logical way of thinking. But scientists are also human beings who have ambitions, biases. Their predisposition is to, if they have a theory, to accept what is evidence that will support that theory and to reject evidence that goes against that theory. And there's a what Sadaputta Prabhu called the knowledge filter. There is actually a tremendous body of knowledge which opposes the supposed, the tremendous amount of geological evidence which opposes the supposed geological evidence for the theory of evolution, biological evolution. But the knowledge, as they point out in their book, Forbidden Archaeology, that knowledge is filtered out. So I'll continue with this tomorrow, Krishna willing. And now we can have arati. Hare Krishna. Not much talk about Krishna this evening. Huh? Talk about science and this and that. Prabhupada wanted it. If you're going to convince others about Krishna, they may have to be deconvinced about all this stuff. So we should discuss this. Krishna discusses it. Asatyam apratishtam te jagadahuranishvaram aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kama haitaka. This is what the demons say. There's no God. There's just nature. Just goes on like that. What else is there left to do but sex? That's what it comes down to. So we should understand these things, at least to some level. Hare Krishna. So we have the arati.